Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Auto Transport Intel. Mic check, 1, 2, 3. It is Wednesday. It's approximately noon Central Time. That means it's time for DOT compliance with your DOT guy, Brian Riker. He's going to answer questions. If you've got authority questions, DOT, IRP, IFTA, pick your anagram, and we'll talk about it. And if you've had an incident or you know somebody that might have an incident, had an incident, needs to talk to somebody, Brian is an excellent resource. He is an expert, and he's got company fleet compliance solutions. I'll share the link to that shortly. And we're going to, that's what we're going to do. We only got 30 minutes, so here, do me a favor. Go ahead, and after you hit that like button, please do hit that like button. I appreciate it. And then you can share this link. What you do is see right below the video. Click share, click copy, grab that YouTube link, text it, email it, share it on social media, tap a friend on the shoulder, say, yeah, I know you're talking about getting into car hauling. Before you do, here's some things you might want to know. In fact, what question do you have? Ask Brian live, and if you miss the show live, put it in the comments below the video. Also, make sure, if you've got those deep, burning business questions, go to autotransportintel.com, click on sign up, become an ATI insider, get on the email blast, talk to Ty. Maybe you can join us for a roundtable. What's the roundtable, you say? Well, we'll tell you all about it. Ty is in the live chat. He can help you right here. Ty will even share his phone number if you ask nicely. Andrew Serica is here. We are here to stay compliant. What's up, Andrew? How's that enclosed car hauling business going for you? I know you stay busy, and it's great to see you in the live chat. Thanks for saying hello. Reese is here. What's up, Reese? Hey, everyone. Brian really knows compliance. True enough. True that. And we even have a book. That's right. I've got my Rules of the Road book. Now, this is written by Henry E. Seaton, Hank Seaton, attorney at law. He knows his stuff, too. So we are, we got the materials. We'll even share the FMCSA website. We can navigate that. Got a question about the website, right? Have you been there and you were like, I'm leaving because I don't know what to do? Well, we can help you with that too. Two Bears Transportation LLC, another Wednesday, another day smarter. Let's get compliant. It is pretty cool. Hey, Carlos is here too. What's going on? You know, that is what the purpose of this show is. I try to keep it light because the material is heavy, right? You are expected to know a lot. Every time they stop you at a scale, they expect you to know the cover, front and back, the website, sideways and forwards. And if you don't, out of service, pull around back, and I don't know, have a nice day. Hang out in the parking lot. There's a vending machine. You can get some chips and a soda and see if you can figure it out. So we want to help you. All right, without further ado, let's go to Brian. Let's make sure. Brian, can you see us and hear us okay?
Yes, I can, Jay. Good afternoon.
Did you like the vending machine one, right?
I had that happen. I was put out of service in San Juan, New Mexico. There wasn't even a vending machine, and they wouldn't let me in the building to use the bathroom either for 10 hours.
Oh, man. Wow. I wonder if that's in the FMCSA rule book. Cannot use bathroom because one of your lights was out.
With some of these officers, it could be. Most of them are great guys, but some definitely have a chip on their shoulder.
And, you know, and I'm glad you said that, because that's the thing, is that if any law enforcement ever tunes into this show, we're really trying to help, because it's got to be hard to be an enforcement officer and then day after day and driver after driver to see just the lack of adherence to the rules and understanding of the regulations. So we're trying to help, just like on the business channel. I'm trying to help educate so that everyone knows what a gate pass is and what the auction expects, what the dealer expects when you deliver, etc. Here, we want to help the enforcement officers so that maybe we just save one driver at a time. Maybe.
Sure. And I'm all about education. I have a lot of good friends. Don't hate me. Don't hang up on the channel now, guys. But I have a lot of good friends that are state troopers, motor carrier enforcement officers. And most of them, they're just out there to try to do the job to keep us safe. They don't want to harass the guy that's trying to do it right. But unfortunately, 20% of the vehicles that get inspected roadside are put out of service. generally for a serious violation. I'm not talking about the nitpicky, you're out of service for 3 seconds because something was loose and you fixed it while you're walking around the truck with the officer. I'm talking missing brake components. I am talking missing wheels, wheel bearings that are failing, stuff like that, the serious catches. And that's what the guys are really here for. And most of them have the heart of a teacher, and they'll try to educate you if you ask them a question.
Well, that's got to be hard. 20%, really? I mean, anything in that neighborhood, that is a lot. What would you say is, what do you think's at the top of the list of common out-of-service reasons?
Brakes out of adjustment is normally number one. Driver not qualified is number two. And I'm not talking about minor qualifications. I'm talking about drivers that don't have valid CDLs, don't have the right class or endorsement for the vehicle that they're operating. Drivers that have no medical card and no record of having a medical card ever, stuff like that. Not, you expired yesterday, so you're a terrible driver. You can't ever run a truck. No. But I'm going to say off the top of my head, I don't have statistics in front of me, but brakes are probably the number one mechanical violation, and operating out of class or no valid driver's license is probably your biggest driver out of service issue, followed by hours of service.
You know, and I want to say this on the weight distribution. I think I pay a lot more attention since we've been talking more about, I think probably like the mini fives get my attention more than they used to. You got a dually and a mini five trailer. And I used to just be like, yeah, just another trailer. But I'm now looking closer than I was before. So this show's having an effect on me, right?
Sure.
I don't drive. I don't load. But I'm looking closer. I see people sharing those pictures on Instagram. And I'm looking like, I wonder if we're good.
Yeah, start adding up the weight. Start looking at, you'll recognize the make and model of the trailer. You'll have an idea what the axles are rated for. We all know what the 3500, 4500 series trucks are rated for. We can do the math, and so can the roadside officer. And that is why the dualies with the wedges and the five-car trailers get singled out at the scale house and get inspected. I have several customers that started in dualies. My ex best friend business partner, he started with a dually and a three-car Kaufman and built a heck of a business out of it with real tractor trailers when it was all said and done. But it was amazing to step up from the dually into a tractor trailer, how enforcement leaves you alone after that.
And I think Ty would say it's also a smart business decision to do that. But it's interesting because we really do. I think that was one of the other reasons we put this together. There is a lot of animosity against wedgies, right? Mm-hmm. From the, what? Can I say super trucker? Is that bad? What should I say?
You can call them whatever you want.
Oh.
But, yes. There is a lot of animosity between the Stinger crowd and anybody else. High mounts. I had a fleet of high mounts, and the Stingers hated us. We were the scourge of the universe as well. We're ruining it. Why not just have two more cars on the truck? And again, it's a business decision. Sometimes the pickup truck and the two or three car trailer is all you need for your business model and your customers. Sometimes the nine car or 10 or even a high rail, I'm in a used high rail today that's going in on trade-in. Wait. Sometimes that's the right truck.
Wait a minute. The Stinger crowd even doesn't like high mounts?
Correct, because it's not a car hauler. You're a wannabe freight hauler. I've heard it all over the years. I ran a high mount for most of my car haul career, and I've heard it all. And I was local pickup and delivery. We did 90-mile short runs. The seven-car high mount was all we needed for what our business model was.
You know, I got to tell you, that actually, I'm almost glad to hear that, because it kind of reinforces my assumption that, you know, some people you just can't please no matter what. And
my motto, and I stole it from a friend of mine in the industry, there's an ass for every seat. And really, there is every type of truck out here. There is a reason for it. There's a market for it. All I care is you're being safe. Don't overload the weight ratings on your truck and trailer, and don't undervalue yourself. Don't ruin what the lane rate average is supposed to pay just because you have a lower overhead. Put that extra money in your pocket, man. Don't give it away. Don't leave money on the table. And most of all, I'm about safety. So just work within the restrictions of your equipment, because we have stingers going down the road loaded at 90, 92,000 pounds. That's 10, 12,000 pounds overweight. There's no reason for it. You're not proving yourself to anybody. You're not supercar hauler because you put that extra car on there and you're 14'6 tall and a 13'6 state and you're 95 foot long and 87 or 90,000 pounds. That's not impressive. That is just ridiculous. And that is part of the problem. Mm.
Very interesting. Well, and so, to, I mean, to circle back around, the thing is that it is, if you are a professional car hauler with decades of experience, carriers, dealers, automakers rely on your expertise to do a great job and move a lot of cars. And that's awesome. But as we do know, with the prevalence and increase of digital auctions and the way things have gone and changed and et cetera, there are more onesies and twosies. All dealers know this. Any dealer paying attention knows this. Even the auctions know this. And so there is a need for the single car, the three car, four car, et cetera. And so no matter what trailer you go with, the point of this show is to make sure you're compliant and you don't get put out of service and you can get that car delivered.
Absolutely. And my last thought, and we'll get off this because I'm not beating anybody up.
Yeah.
But putting overloaded trucks, whether it's the wedge or it's the stinger that is overloaded, we're not doing anybody any good because, as we know, artificial intelligence is becoming the way of the future. These automated dispatch systems that build loads look at, well, he had this equipment and hauled that load. We know it's going to fit. We're going to make that a standard load, and maybe it shouldn't have fit on the truck. And we're just shooting ourselves in the foot, because if we do that extra car for the lower rate average on the lane, now it drives the lane rate down. But this isn't business. This is compliance. So let's stick to the compliance side of it.
But I like what you just said, because that is important, is that if you bend rules, then for some that becomes the new standard. So I guess we're going to bend the rules every load.
Yes, so and it is a compliance issue.
It is
for over length, over height, over weight. That's compliance, and that's what drives up your safety score. I was talking to a very well-known fleet owner just an hour ago, and he's having problems with drivers getting popped on speeding tickets, and he's having problems with drivers with frayed straps, and so his unsafe driving and his vehicle maintenance are almost intervention level, and they should not be. This guy runs one of the cleanest, most professional fleets out there, and yet because a mile an hour over is a speeding violation and they use that as a reason to pull you over in certain states, it makes it look like he's got a bunch of cowboys out there driving. And because they have a slightly frayed strap, even though they've got more securement on the car than what's required by law, it's still a vehicle maintenance violation. And so you want to stack the deck in your favor and do everything you can to be compliant, so that when you get these stupid little violations you're going to get anyhow, they don't destroy your safety score and they don't put you out of business.
All right, very cool. So let's do this. I'm going to share my screen and let's see if what kind of news stuff I've got today. Oh yes, okay. In the news, and I don't normally share, you know, like I'm not interested in bankruptcies and who got arrested. I leave that. There's plenty of channels for that. But I found this interesting because it is directly related to what we're talking about. 30 months for faking FMCSA records. Do you know about this one?
Oh, I do know about that. I do know about that one. In this particular case, the carrier would edit his driver's log so that the drivers had more time. He would make whole trips disappear. I think he even altered some vehicle registration and insurance documents. It's been a while since I paid attention to this one, but he would, the owner of the motor carrier,
wow,
was faking paperwork to coerce his drivers and give them time to drive more. And the drivers felt compelled to do it because they is either that or you don't have a job. And sometimes you might need that job for 6 months or a year to get experience so you can get hired on somewhere better. And I believe there was even some false medical certificates in this company's files. There wasn't a record that he wasn't willing to forge.
That was his company motto. There's not a record I'm not willing to forge.
And if this
allegedly,
is the one
allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. Okay. Allegedly. If this is the one I'm thinking of, one of his trucks was involved in a fatal crash, and he submitted falsified logs to the officer investigating the crash.
So I want to say this is really interesting you said that, because I think it's a different company.
Okay.
And they're both in East Providence.
I think.
And here's what's really, this is really crazy. I was in East Providence with Serge the car hauler a few years ago, and he said this is like Russia Central.
Mm-hmm.
So, allegedly. That's my recollection. I could be wrong, Your Honor, but it's really fascinating. And and also, just on that note, is that, you know, there are some groups, folks, whatever, that have tendencies to do something. And I was talking to a guy, and he was Russian. He said, listen, here's the deal. A lot of folks from our culture, because of the way they were raised or whatever, they're in survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that mode, you just look at things a little differently.
Yes.
He was trying to explain it to me, and I was like, that's pretty interesting, actually.
And I understand, because I will tell you, as a compliance guy, compliance does not always equal safety. Just because you're compliant doesn't mean it's actually safe. It just means you check the box on the form to make the guys that wrote the regulations happy. That said, a lot of people that come to this country to better themselves and make a better life for their family and their future generations, they work very hard, and they don't want some arbitrary clock telling them that they're tired and they can't work. And now, that's not the way our society does things, but it's like,
right,
to your point, that's the way they were raised. They come from a place where there were no rules.
And, well, that's how business people are, too. Like, entrepreneurs don't work 9 to 5 Monday through Friday.
No.
And if there was a law that said, what? That's the thing about laws. Laws get written by man. And so, what if we write a law that you can only work 9 to 5 Monday through Friday?
I would love to see how the general public reacted to that compared to the restrictions they put on us. And you've got several of my friends and clients in the live stream, and every one of them will tell you that I answer emails at 8, 9 o'clock at night for them, and that's when I get some of the work done. We do what we have to do.
So that will be interesting. And in fact, I started reading, you know, science fiction is fascinating, especially now because we're in it. I'm reading Fahrenheit 451. Firemen don't put out fires, they burn books. Okay. All right, let's get back to the news. Jay, that was really happy.
Yes.
Thank you so much. I feel so top of the compliance to you. It is St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. Let's go to share my screen. Okay. Hey, here's a question. Big Mike the Trucker. I'm buying a truck. Do I do IFTA and IRP before I get the truck or after?
All right. Well, Big Mike, if this is your first truck and you're not operating your company yet, you're not going to be able to do your IFTA and IRP until you have your insurance and everything else in place. If this is just an additional truck or a replacement truck, then yes, you will properly register them before you put it in service. If it's your first truck and you're starting your company, talk to your dealer. Most states offer some sort of temporary credential to allow you to get it home or get it to the facility of the motor carrier you're going to lease it to if you're not running under your own numbers. But in any case, you cannot haul a load on it until you have your proper IFTA and IRP account set up and the proper credentials for it. And in some cases, your temporary credential is only good for one trip from the dealer back to your house or to your garage or wherever. So, and that answer is going to vary from state to state. So it depends on the state you're in. hopefully you're buying it from a dealer. They're good at helping with this. If not, it gets a little complicated because your average motor vehicle agent has no idea what to do for temporary permits for commercial trucks because it works different. I mean, there's some states where if you got a bill of sale, you can drive your newer used car for 30 days or whatever. It does not work that way with a commercial vehicle. And it is a commercial vehicle the moment you buy it, with a business intent. You may not be fully set up as the business, but you bought that 3500 dually, or you bought that Peterbilt tractor with the intent to use it for commercial purposes. Contrary to popular belief, and I'll get some hate mail, it is not your personal vehicle. There are no exceptions. Get over it. It's a commercial truck.
It's really interesting. What you just said about intent to use, see, I'm not familiar, right? That doesn't sound like just normal common sense. It sounds like a rule that's made, and you have to respect and understand that stuff. That's intent yes. to use. Wow, that's yes. fascinating.
That's the same principle they use to decide whether you're an interstate or a intrastate motor carrier. The intent of the shipment is the product intended to leave the state at some point. And you are aware it's intended to leave the state, such as a car that you know is going to a dealer in Texas, even though you're only moving it from the Pennsylvania auction to your holding lot in Pennsylvania before it gets put on a 9-car hauler to make the long trip. The intent is interstate. The same thing here. The intent is commercial vehicle. Therefore, they're going to want you to be qualified as a commercial motor carrier to move that brand new truck you bought.
Ty said it in the live chat, took the words out of my mouth. That's the gotcha.
Yes.
We got you. We got your intent. By the way, John, Finest Towing and Recovery, Jay, please ask Brian about my moving to Florida from New Jersey. I'm keeping two trucks in New Jersey. I'm going to register all my vehicles in Florida. Do I need the two trucks from New Jersey in Florida to do registration or inspection?
Most states, you can register commercial vehicles without them entering the state you're registering them in. So you should be able to register them while they stay up in the state of New Jersey, in Florida. And if they never physically enter the state of Florida, then if Florida has a state safety inspection, they would not need it. They would only need it once they physically enter the state of Florida. So if they're going to stay in New Jersey. Now, my question for you, John, are these apportioned registered vehicles, or are they non-apportioned vehicles? Because if they're a regular Florida truck plate or a regular New Jersey truck plate right now, the state of New Jersey is not going to let you leave them in New Jersey and run them locally on a Florida registration unless they're getting their cut, their piece of the pie. They have what's called a dual registration program. That's why when you look at the UPS package van that comes to your house, UPS is based out of Kentucky. All of their tractor trailers have Indiana apportion plates on it, but the local little non-CDL vehicle that comes to your house has a New Jersey, a Pennsylvania, a Missouri license plate on it. Because if you have trucks based in a state that are intended to stay in that state, if they're not apportion registered, they have to have that state's license plate on them.
Interesting. Wow, that's pretty good stuff. And also, John, just so you know how to get a hold of Brian, which, you know, you might be at that point, contact Brian, and I'm going to put it in the live chat here, fleetcompliancesolutions.net. Fleet Compliance Solutions LLC is Brian's company, and he wants to help keep you compliant. On this show, we share information. We look at news stories and whatnot, but if you want expert advice, contact Brian directly, and he'll guide you through any formalities that you need to make sure you adhere to so that you are fully compliant. Let's take a look at a couple more things. We only got 5 more minutes. The show goes so fast. VMT, what's going on?
All right, this is a compliance issue as well. the powers that be in Congress feel that trucks don't pay their fair share into the Highway Trust Fund for highway maintenance, which is absolute nonsense. Trucks pay about 30% of the revenue generated from trucks on the fuel tax, which is the current method of funding our highways, makes up about 30% of the Highway Trust Fund, yet trucks only make up 7 or 8% of the vehicles on the highway. And even though we do a little more damage than your average passenger car just because of our size and weight, it is not 30% more damage than your average car. However, there's a group in Congress that believe trucks don't pay their fair share. They want to do a vehicle miles traveled tax for large commercial trucks only, which is unfair. And it's an invasion of our privacy. We already have to report our miles for IFTA and stuff. But they want to do it with ELD or GPS tracking. So even those of us that don't have to use an ELD will end up having an ELD in your truck just for the GPS tracking portion of this, which is the biggest issue that most people have with it, is the privacy issue. Because your ELD, when you go off duty by regulation, it has to widen its focus from exactly where you are to a 10-mile radius. They don't want to allow that to happen when they're tracking your miles for tax purposes, which brings us up to the ATRI study you just put up on the screen. And that's an older study, but basically it identifies that trucks do pay more than their own fair share, and trucks pay approximately $14,000 a year now in road user fees compared to the average car that pays about $1,000. And when we do just federal, it's about $9,000 in federal user fees and $900 for the average car owner. So we're already cars are paying 10% of what a truck pays per mile that they operate. We're already paying more than our fair share in the trucking industry. The Highway Trust Fund is broke, but we need a better way than VMT. We all know that there's four states that do it right now: New York, New Mexico, Oregon, and Kentucky, and it's a disaster. Now imagine if you had to do that for all 50 states and we'd go back to having decals all over the truck and different tax returns, and there's got to be a better way to fund the highway system.
If I weigh in, it'll be speculation live and it'll just take away from the knowledge you just shared. So I don't want to do that. Here's what I want to do. We only got a few minutes left. And thank you for that, Brian. I think you eloquently cover these topics. And so I really appreciate that. I want to say this is that, there we go. Last night was a huge show. We had United Road on the show on Auto Transport Intel. That is a really big deal. I think it was great for them. It was great for my channel. And I think overall, it was great for a lot of carriers in this industry. We really are trying to bridge the gap. We do that on this show. We do that on Thursdays. We do it on Fridays. And it's time. We are splintered and fragmented as heck. And yes, we may have disagreements, but we should at least be able to talk about it instead of just sounding off on Facebook threads and throwing our rocks at each other. It was time to talk, and there was actually in the live chat a couple interesting comments, and the CEO of United Road was actually in the live chat last night, so it was really neat.
That's awesome, and you're absolutely right, Jay. We are, at the end of the day, we're all in the same business. And if we help each other, a rising tide rises all ships. If we help educate the people that aren't quite getting it, it's good for all of us. It'll improve profitability for everybody. If we help the guys that aren't quite getting it be safer, it will help us all with our insurance rates. And we know the premiums are going through the roof.
Man.
A car hauler is a car hauler in the eyes of the insurance company. They don't care if it's a dually and a wedge or
totally.
A stinger. And so
dealers
again,
don't care. Auctions don't care.
Yeah.
The auctions don't care. I don't want to get into what, because I'm speculating again, but that's right. The only people that care about the size of your trailer are carriers.
Mm-hmm. And
there I said
we really need to police our own industry before we get more regulation shoved down our throat and someone else does it for us. And that's no matter what mode of transportation you're in, we need to police ourselves before the government steps in and does it for us.
Also, just the last thing, and this is really, really neat. Wait a minute, where'd you go? Oh, here we go. Sharing the screen again, and there's, wait a minute. There we go. There we both are. Okay, so tomorrow, in line with that progress and change that we need, tomorrow I am the moderator and host. I've been invited by IARA, International Automotive Remarketers Alliance, to host and moderate a panel with Joe Kuechler of Mannheim Logistics, Adam Laura of Assertus, Ray Moran of United Road, and Eric Rosenau of Vroom. And yes, if you want to accuse me of tooting my own horn, that's fine. But the point of this is that we're going to meet with, you know, these are executives at industry-leading companies, and I've already kind of established that I plan to actually have a discussion about transportation and logistics. We're not going to go back through the history of COVID, and this is not a cheerleading session. We're actually going to have a conversation, and not an argument. No, there's no hard questions, there's no gotcha questions, but what's really going on currently in transportation and logistics. And there's a lot to talk about: technology, the importance of carriers, changes in sales at the auctions, what the dealers are doing, the way customers are buying more online. OEMs are now saying they're going to sell you your car and deliver it to you straight from the automaker. So there is so much to talk about. I'm excited about it. And frankly, yeah, I'm a bit nervous about it, too, you know, of course, right? Because it's a big deal, but I'm excited that, as I said, and there was even an article came out talking about, you know, what I said about the panel, and that is that I feel like transportation lacks a seat at the conference table when it comes to automotive, and I'm hoping to help change that. And by the way, and I say this too, organizations like Automotive Logistics, Auto Haulers Associations, for embracing me and letting me into those trade shows and associations to learn and grow, because now as I spend time with these leaders of industry, I feel prepared to actually talk about the entire community and industry as it is. So, you know, that's, so I'm really excited about it. It's a pretty big deal.
It is. And what you just said is so true, that the trade associations, the trade publications are paramount to success in the industry. That's where you learn. Education is key. I mean, I'm a compliance guy. I belong to what most people would think is the enemy. I'm a member of the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance, which is the association of the motor carrier enforcement officers. I'm a member of the Illinois, they call it the Illinois Truck Cops Association, which I don't like the truck cop part, but it's the Illinois Motor Carrier Enforcement Association. And that's how you learn. That's how I made some of the friends that I have. And it is important. Every one of you out there should belong to IATA, AHA, one of the trade associations. Or even if you belong to, and I disagree with probably half of what they do, but even if you belong to OOIDA or an association like that, there's strength in numbers, there's power in numbers, there's education out there. Most everything that I know, I've learned from reading a trade publication or talking to somebody that's in the industry. That's what it's all about. So yeah. Great job on promoting that conference, and I'm sure you'll knock it out of the park as a moderator.
Oh, thank you so much. And by the way, shout out to OOIDA, because I share a lot of OOIDA articles. And whether you or I agree or disagree with some of the other aspects, education in general, you can't knock it. You know, if there's education in it, it's worthwhile. And that's, again, another shout out to Hank Seaton and Rules of the Road. Hopefully we can get him on here sometime to talk.
I'd love to chat.
But even I would too. I really would. I'd love to catch up with Hank. And I think I said this before, is that what's neat, this is a signed copy of his book. I met him at Used Car Week. I think it was you, or was it AHA? I think it was the AHA spring meeting in 2018. And anyways, so it is, it's really interesting, because I think, and I'm not afraid to say that, I think some folks try to avoid some of that formal education, and that it's just better to get information through hearsay. And I don't actually understand that at all. So.
Lunch counter lawyers will get you in an awful lot of trouble at the truck stop.
Lunch counter lawyers. I love that. That's great, man. Perfect way to end the show. Brian, thank you so much. We went a few minutes over, so thank you so much for taking the time and helping me put this together.
You're welcome, Jay. See you next week.
All right. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Take care.
Be careful. It's amateur day. All the drunks are out. Watch out.
Okay. Be careful. It's like Cinco de Mayo, right? Be careful.
Absolutely.
Okay. Make your TikToks at home, not while you're driving. All right. See you guys.
Bye.
All right. Bye. And I let Brian go. I just wanted to thank you guys so much for tuning in for DOT compliance. And let's go into the live chat. Just a couple last things. Chris Chamberlain. Yes, there's a better way if they did not mismanage the funds. I agree totally. I say that all the time. That's actually why I didn't want to chime in, because I was going to just totally say something negative. And that is that it seems like every time they come up with a way to raise money, then they end up diverting the purpose of the money. I mean, we're so in debt as a country. How does any of the money that we actually... Okay, yeah, you know what I'm saying. All right, Jay, thanks again for getting those guys on last night. Answer many questions. Yeah, thank you, Chris. I loved having United Road on last night. It was amazing. Again, it was fun. And I think, it, you know what? Honestly, one of the cherries on top was seeing Mark, the CEO of United Road, in the live chat. Unbelievable. That is amazing. And it is really good to see. Mike, if I have two 7K axles, but dreary trailer to 12K, am I overweight if I put more than 12K in the axles? Dang it. I missed that, and we already let Brian go. We're going to have to pull that up. Mike, do me a favor, Mike. Please tune in next Wednesday and ask that question. What I'll also do is I'm going to highlight it, and I'll share it with Brian. What I did is I just texted Brian the question. So at least we have that. But please do tune in next week. And what a great way, great teaser, Jay. Thanks for teasing it. Like SEMA for the car aftermarket, need to join an association to get your voices heard collectively. Good luck tomorrow. Thank you so much, Chris. Thank you so much for that, guys. I know I've kept you too long, so thank you so much for hanging out with me and DOT Compliance and Brian Riker. Have a safe St. Patrick's Day, and we'll see you soon. You guys take care. And there's no dispatching live tomorrow. I need to prep for the conference and be fresh and be ready to go. It's going to be a big day. It's going to be awesome. So I'll see you guys Friday on Cars on the Move, where we connect dealers, auctions, and carriers. Take care, everybody. Stay safe.